This show is part of the Out of This World Entertainment on the Sci-Fi Podcast Network, TSFPN.com.
Hi, and welcome to the podcast for TheForce.net. My name's Eric, and I'm your host, bringing you the latest news and commentary from the Star Wars community. Hey, we're back. Before we get to the Empire Strikes Back review, I've got a few news items for you. First, it looks like Lucasfilm is now looking for screenwriters for the upcoming live-action Star Wars TV series. If you just glanced over this announcement on the website, you missed some more interesting news, since that report also claims that the series will be 50 hours long, instead of the previously announced 100 hours, and that principal photography will begin in 2007 in Australia. Now, for those of you who are trying to nail down a firm time frame of when we might actually see this new series, this will probably be less helpful than you might think. There was no word as to when in 2007 they'd begin shooting, but what's probably going to be more confusing is the assumption that, like most TV shows, the series would probably start part of the way through the season's production. If you make the assumption that Lucas will be using a lot of CG work in this series, and if you make the assumption that he's going to be doing a ton of post-production work like he normally does, there could be a longer-than-usual delay between when they start and when we get to see the show. A few of our listeners have written in asking if there's any word as to what network might be getting the series. As of right now, nothing's been announced. Most speculation has been for Fox, since Lucasfilm already has a good working relationship with them, and frankly, Fox would be stupid not to try to get this thing. Another obvious possibility would be the Sci-Fi Channel, but with Stargate and Battlestar Galactica doing so well, I'm not sure what their interest level would be. Sure, you'd think they must want it because it's Star Wars, but it's a little more complicated than that. The other interesting piece of information in this report was that the series will revolve around Imperial bounty hunters. This info came from IGN FilmForce, and I've yet to hear any other confirmation on this personally, but I'm leaning toward this one being accurate. We know that this is one of the initial possibilities Lucas had been considering, and given the earlier report that Lucas had recently talked about this with Daniel Logan, who played Boba Fett in Episode 2, it's not really that surprising. In other news, Volume 2 of The Clone Wars, the animated series that aired this spring on Cartoon Network, won the Emmy Award for Best Animated Program for programming 1 hour or more. Just to clarify, last year we saw Seasons 1 and 2, which collectively made up Volume 1. That's the DVD that's currently available. What many people refer to as Season 3 is Volume 2. The DVD for Volume 2 of Clone Wars will be coming out on December 6th. So, to recap, Episode 3 comes out on November 1st, Clone Wars Volume 2 comes out on December 6th, and any other DVD releases, such as the prequel trilogy box set or the set of all six movies, won't be out until at least next year. In other DVD news, Walmart will apparently have a bonus DVD packaged with the upcoming Episode 3 DVD release. It includes R2-D2 and C-3PO's Chronicles of Luke and Anakin Skywalker, and is almost an hour in length. This is the first and only store exclusive we've heard about, but, you know, it wouldn't surprise me if Target did something similar, and there's a possibility Best Buy might come up with something too. But for now, it looks like when Episode 3 comes out on DVD, I'll probably be picking it up at Walmart. Well, that's all I've got for now. Here's Jay with another Expanded Universe Minute.
Welcome to the Expanded Universe Minute. I'm your host, Jovial Jay, from Jedi Journals at RebelScum.com. Scheduled to ship next week from Dark Horse's Empire No. 35. An all-Darth Vader issue from John Jackson Miller and Brian Ching. Vader heads out on the trail of the Rebels, and only one man can help them. Also scheduled to be released next week is The Unseen Queen. Traveling back to the unknown regions to unravel the mystery, the Skywalkers and Solos discover an evil far more familiar than they ever expected in Part 2 of the Dark Nest Trilogy by Troy Denning. And be on the lookout for Star Wars, The Ultimate Visual Guide by writer Wyndham and published by DK Books. Rumor has it that some copies are showing up in advance of the October release date. This amazing hardcover overview of the entire history of the galaxy far, far away, from canon to EU, will set you back $25. Tune in each week to get the lowdown on new items being published in the galaxy far, far away. This has been the Expanded Universe Minute. Jovial Jay signing out.
The Empire Strikes Back, which is practically never referred to by its other name, Episode 5, is my favorite in the series. It has one of the least impressive space battles, one of the least impressive lightsaber battles, the least impressive visual effects, and with the exception of Yoda, the least interesting aliens. Yet it's my favorite, and it seems to be the favorite of most fans. So why is this, if it's so unimpressive in most of the ways that usually define the Star Wars series? To put it quite simply, it's the characters. George Lucas has created a universe that's rich in detail and that's easy to become immersed in. But in this film, it's not so much the action scenes that draw us in, nor is it the locations or the effects, it's the characters. We see the characters being less dramatic and more real. We're not just immersed in the world, we're living there, really feeling what the characters are going through rather than just observing it. You often hear me complain about Lucas when it comes to directing actors and writing dialogue, and I usually have to clarify that there are many things I think he's good at, just not those two things. Empire Strikes Back is a perfect example of why he should have someone else directing. When you combine Lucas's creative genius and his editing skills with a very skilled director, you get a movie that's above par all the way around, rather than having a movie whose quality depends on coming up with enough strengths to outweigh the weaknesses. Watching Empire, and to a lesser extent Return of the Jedi, is sometimes frustrating to me because it makes me realize how much better the prequels could have been if Lucas had just swallowed his pride and let somebody else direct. Still, at least the last two films in the series had someone else directing, so it's a good way to wrap things up. Let's begin with the first act. First, we start out on Hoth. I love the fact that this is an icy, snow-covered world. It's the only Star Wars movie in which Tatooine never appears, and frankly, I'm very happy about that. I've been in deserts and can't stand them. Hoth is a great change of pace, and it's also the only place in the entire series, with the possible exception of Dagobah, where we get a chance to see our heroes struggling with the environment as well as with the enemy. Even when Luke does break away from the Wampa, it still looks unlikely that he'll survive. And when they close the shield doors, even Han, who's obviously in a much better situation, may not make it back alive either. Speaking of whom, to me, Han is really the most interesting character in this movie. Irvin Kershner really gives Harrison Ford room to breathe, so to speak. The way he deals with Leia, Chewie, 3PO, and the other rebels while on Hoth really goes a long way to establish some depth to his character that wasn't executed quite as well in A New Hope. And throughout the movie, Han's interaction with 3PO is great. But I digress. The Imperials find our hero's hidden base, and they move in. We see rebels hold up in trenches with a pretty good amount of firepower, so we know they'll be able to hold back whatever stormtroopers might come over the ridge. Of course, we don't get stormtroopers, we get AT-ATs. And now things really start to hit the fan. Watching the various ground combat situations through the prequels was interesting and fun, but there's something about watching the snowspeeders face off against the AT-ATs that made it far more interesting. We're watching Luke, and to a lesser extent a handful of other pilots, face off against an enemy of superior numbers and superior firepower. We can relate to Luke. We care about what happens to him as an individual. Looking at the two armies facing off after the arena battle in Episode 2, however, we don't really care about any of the individual soldiers. We saw Kit Fisto running around with an army of troops, but that was it. We saw Yoda standing on a command platform, but he wasn't in the thick of things. So while it was interesting and fun to watch, it lacked the intensity that we have here. The only exception in the prequels was probably the battle between the Gungans and the battle droids in Episode 1, but most people didn't care enough about Jar Jar for it to be the same thing. So watching the combat against the AT-ATs was one of the best parts of the movie. And getting to see Wedge one-up Luke by taking down the first AT-AT was great. Wedge is awesome, and I don't care what anybody says, we need a Rogue Squadron TV series, not a Bounty Hunters TV series. Anyway, another great thing about the first act was Vader. Once again, we get more characterization this time around. Not only is Vader ruthless toward his enemies, but he apparently goes around choking all his command officers anytime he has a bad day. Or really, even when he has a good day, I guess, since things were going pretty well for Vader when he choked Admiral Ozzel. I mean, he found the hidden base, he just arrived with the fleet of Star Destroyers, and a ground army vastly superior to the Rebels. Anyway, the point is, we get to see what type of leader Vader is this time around, and he's much more prominent in this film than he was in A New Hope. So right out of the intensity of the first act, we transition into the second act by having the Falcon chase through an asteroid field. Not too bad. Then we switch over to Luke on Dagobah. R2 made the Dagobah scenes fun, but for the most part, I'm not a big fan of Dagobah, nor of Yoda. It was great the first time I saw it, but now that I've seen the movie a billion times, this is kind of a slow part for me. There's some novelty in seeing Yoda much older now, after having watched him in the prequels, but that'll probably wear off after another viewing or two. That being said, Yoda was certainly impressive. Frank Oz brought this puppet to life in such a way that never made him feel childish or lame. And really, the Dagobah scenes are pivotal in getting us to believe Luke's transition from a whiny farm boy to somebody who could possibly be a Jedi Knight. Especially now that we're getting a better idea through Yoda of what a Jedi Knight really is. And yet another example of why Lucas should have somebody else direct the prequels, Kirshner was able to do with Han and Leia, in just a handful of scenes, what Lucas spent two movies trying to do with Anakin and Padme and couldn't. Han and Leia were at odds with each other in A New Hope, and didn't exactly get along all that well at the beginning of Empire. Sure, there was more sexual tension than honest dislike, but still, it's not like there was anything romantic between them. Yet an hour later, we get, "I love you," and "I know." And we believe it. I've yet to ever hear someone complain about the love story between Han and Leia being forced, or moving too fast, or being unbelievable. Yet I'm constantly having to defend Episode 2, usually with a read-the-book comment, explaining to people how the love story between Anakin and Padme could possibly have been believable. But Irving Kirshner pulls it off beautifully here, especially in the second act, and this is yet another reason why, to me, this feels like Han and Leia's movie rather than Luke's. The cat-and-mouse game played between Vader and Han in the second act is great, too. Not only is it cool seeing a whole fleet of Star Destroyers, along with the Super Star Destroyer, but we're on the edge of our seats watching Han maneuver from one situation to the next, never really getting out of danger, just leaving one type of danger for another. And of course, the bounty hunters were a great touch, not just for the movie itself, but for the vast amount of use they've been to the expanded universe. Then we enter Act 3, and we arrive at Cloud City. This is one of the most prominent changes to the movie from the special edition version, and when it comes right down to it, I really think that this movie probably benefited the most from the special edition updates overall. So we get to meet Lando Calrissian, 3PO gets blasted to bits for some unexplained reason, Luke has a premonition that the rest of the gang is in trouble, and then we find out that not only is Lando a traitor, he's brought both Boba Fett and Vader himself to Cloud City. So now Han, Leia, and Chewie are in the hands of Vader, and Luke is going to try to go rescue them. Except Vader is expecting this. It's a trap, which means Vader's got the upper hand. And that would be even if Luke were a Jedi Knight. He's not yet. He never finished his training. So things are bad all around for our heroes. So we've got the intensity of the whole underdog situation that we had in A New Hope, but this time around, we've got more invested in the characters. This combination, which is maintained consistently throughout this film, is why this movie stands apart from any other movie in the saga. But wait, there's more. Han gets frozen in carbonite. Luke loses to Vader, not just loses the battle, but loses a hand. And then we find out that Vader is Luke's father. And the bounty hunter takes off with Han, and then the most tragic part of the movie happens. Luke has been saved and is given an artificial hand. The gang is back together again, except Han. The heroes have been beaten, but it's okay, as long as they get Han back. And just when you figure they're going to somehow intercept the bounty hunter's ship or something, the end credits roll. That has got to be one of the most frustrating endings to a movie ever. I mean, to a good movie, at least. Not only that, but that was probably the first really frustrating to be continued ending that we've ever had in a film. At least, it's the earliest one I can think of. You know, I don't necessarily want to like this movie the best. I'd rather be able to say that Episode 3 was this good, since its events are generally more interesting. Or Return of the Jedi, because it wraps everything up. But the quality of this movie just can't be matched by the others. The portrayals of the characters are stronger, and the story is subtle and simple, yet still intense. As far as replay value, I find the Yoda scenes a little less interesting over time, but that's certainly not a flaw of the movie, that's just because it's very expositional and I've seen the film too many times. But I commend Lucas for taking the risk of turning this over to Irving Kirshner to direct it, and I commend Kirshner for pulling it off so well. This is certainly the standard of how to do Star Wars correctly. I hope you've enjoyed today's podcast. I want to encourage you guys to email us anytime you have questions, comments, or feedback. Our email address is podcast@theforce.net. And if you like today's show, you can help us out a lot by voting for us at podcastalley.com. As always, the opinions expressed here belong to myself, and they don't necessarily reflect the opinions of other TFN staff members, nor of Lucasfilm. TheForce.net is not affiliated with Lucasfilm in any way. This podcast is copyright 2005 TheForce.net, and as silly as this sentence sounds, all trademarks are owned by their respective owners. Until next time, take care, and may The Force be with you.